Thanks. So, hello everyone. Thanks for joining us today. I know that was a quite short notice, but we have the GNSO Council call this Thursday, and usually we have our policy meeting 2 days before, so we can cover the motion in table and also other issues like update from working groups and so on. So we have the agenda that I sent a few days ago. And so first we will start with preparing for the GNSO meeting, and then we go for updates or any other business like comment and so on. So let's first start with the roll call. Natalie, can you please check who? So for the roll call?
I'll do the roll call for you, I think. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the NCSD monthly meeting on the 10th of December 2013. On the call today, we have Rafi Damak, David Cake, Klaus Stoll, Milo Luminaire, Patrick Lenihan, Roy Boresti, Rudy Vansnick, Stephanie Dillon, and Robin Gross. I have received no apologies for today's call. And for that, we have myself, Natalie Peregrin. I'd like to remind you all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Rafi.
Thank you, Natalie. So, that was our first item. Is there any comment about the agenda if you want to add something or... Okay, hearing none, I guess that we can move to the next item. So to talk about the motion. So basically, we have two motions for the GNSO Council on Thursday. Natalie, can you share the other document, please? Okay, so let's go. So the first motion is about the GEEK final report in universal acceptance of ID and TLD. To be frank, I was in that working group, but I didn't participate for a while, so I'm not sure what's the latest update there. I know that Avery is there, but she cannot attend for today's call. So I would ask our counselor if they have any update or any opinion about this motion and how they think to vote on it. So as counselor, we have David, Klaus, and... Well, that's all. So should we start with David?
Let's not.
Well, there is always someone who needs to volunteer, so it's up to... Okay. Okay. Klaus?
I think you should learn not to put people on the spot. Ask for volunteers.
Yes, Klaus, but the question is that as counselor, you know, you have to vote in this motion, and there is some expectation that you, to review it, to discuss also within the GNSO Council, so at least other people can have an idea what kind of discussion you had and what, in which direction you want to vote, so that's why.
What I can tell you is I shared the motion with the people in NPOC, and so far I have not received any comments or objections.
Okay. Well,
there's only two motions we've got. I mean, there's the JIG report and the DSSA report. I know the JIG report has already been, essentially already gone to the CCNSO and been approved, so I assume that the GNSO is going to approve it as well. As far as I'm aware, it's uncontroversial. The DSSA report, I mean, there's a little bit of, exactly controversy, but some sort of regret in that a lot of people would rather the, well, certainly would rather that the group has not really fulfilled its charter. Sort of done about half the work, but there seems to be general consensus that it's lost its momentum. It doesn't really have much, it's not much enthusiasm to carry on at this point, and it would be very, very difficult. It sort of would have to wait on dealing with some. It's a complicated issue, but essentially it would have to, because of the formation of a board working group that overlaps the role today, they would essentially be sort of floundering about waiting to see in the outcome of other processes for a year or something. Even though the DSSA has essentially done not all of the work it was set out to do, but it just, there seems to still be general consensus that we should accept the final report and allow the group to close, and perhaps we might set up another working group to do the rest of its job in a year, year and a half, or something like that. But no one, as far as I'm aware, there's no. No one is intending to vote against either motion.
Okay, so thanks, Dave. That's just to. Just
hi, it's Maria, just joining.
Hi, hello, Maria. Okay, it will be your turn later. So, just to be sure about your what you experienced, so the GIG should know, there is no real controversial stuff about it, but for the DSA, there is some issues, maybe some discussion about, but for both, they will be there. They should be, how to say, approved.
Yeah, I don't expect anyone will vote against the motion. There may be some discussion. I've been following the DSSA more closely than I have the JIG. So if anyone else has any comments on what they think the discussion will be like around the JIG motion, I'm happy to hear it.
Okay. Thanks, David. Okay, so since we are doing kind of tour de table of our counselor, and Maria just joined us. Maria?
Hi there. Okay, so it's about the two motions, is it? The IDN acceptance one, as far as I know, I've not heard about anything contentious in it, so I think it's a, yes, okay to vote in favor of. And on the DSSA thing, on the GNSO Council list, Mikey raised some issues about David knows this better, but is this a motion where it's wanting to send some issues back to the working group, and Mikey is saying that the working group is too tired and fed up, or have I got that completely wrong?
No, that's pretty much a good sort of characterization of it. The working group has only done part of its work, but Mikey wants to close it. Says everyone wants to close it early because, it's just sort of lost enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And doesn't see a clear point to proceed in the short term, like in the next. Doesn't really see a clear way to proceed in the next year or so. So I don't think anyone's actually standing to vote against it, but there may be some discussion about whether if we do anything further about it.
So, I think To give some context, Mikey is the co-chair of the DSA working group. So, and the DSA working group is not active since a while. I don't recall, you know, there was any discussion in that working group. So, sending back, so I guess that's why maybe he's not in favor, because that it will be hard to have, again, some activity there. I think people moved some somewhere else now. So, okay. So we also have Amr who joined us, so it will be his turn too to tell us about his opinion about the two motion. Amr? He's not. So he joined Adobe, but I'm not sure that he's in the bridge.
Rafiq, it's Bria. I have a question.
Oh, yeah. If you are using, you have Adobe Connect, maybe you need just to switch off the sound there.
Rafiq, it's Maria. Can I ask my question?
Yes. Which question? Yes.
Oh, good. I guess I did just ask them, so that was a bit circular. Sorry. So the question was basically to David. I feel that we should vote in favor of this motion. Is that about right, or is there any reason why we would, you know?
Oh, no, I absolutely feel we should vote in favor of both motions.
Okay, great.
So till now we didn't see any objection to the two motions. So, so maybe now we can ask Amr. Amr, are you here?
Hi, this is Amr. Yes, I am.
Yes.
I just joined the call a minute ago. It seems that I might have missed some of the discussion, the two motions. And to be honest, I'm fairly unfamiliar with these two topics. I'll try to do as much homework as I can over the next 2 days before the GNSO council call. But any input now would be appreciated. Did I miss much?
Well, till now, we didn't see or heard any objection about the two motions. So if you find something controversial later, you can just maybe bring that to the discussion, and then maybe that can influence the the vote. But now it looks that there is no problem.
Okay. All right. Thanks. This is Amr again. Am I correct in that David might have had some reservations on one of them? Is David on the call?
No, not really. I mean, I don't have any. I don't disagree with Mike's opinion on the DSSA motion. I just think likely in the discussion there will, you know, it was good work that should be continued. It's regretful that the working group only did sort of half the work expected of us. Perhaps we'll discuss a process by which we might sort of restart it at some later date. But that's likely to be. I don't think that's likely to be a long discussion, because I suspect Mike is going to tell us we should wait at least a year.
Okay, good. So we don't have any other counselor here, so it will be if anybody else has an opinion about the two motions, it will be good to hear about. Otherwise, we can move to the next item.
There will be some discussion about input to the ATRT too and stuff, but I don't. That won't be a vote. So.
Yeah, it's Maria here. On that one, so I've actually drafted the input to it, you know, based on discussions in the council, and I sent it yesterday, so they're looking at it now. It's basically stuff about mostly talking about the board GNSO relationship and saying the board shouldn't really be able to sort of impose artificial deadlines on the GNSO when PDPs are, you know, kind of stuck. And then the other main thing in it, I think, was that, was about trying to find a way or supporting the idea that the GAC would find ways to be involved in working groups and PDPs generally. So it's pretty straightforward. And actually, I've just sent Joy, Lidicott, and I are going to work together on doing an NCSG input to it. So we're kind of working away from that draft and her draft too.
Thanks, Maria. I was thinking that we are going to cover any other issue in the GNSO Council agenda, but the ATRT was supposed to be covered later, but that's okay. So I think we have the deadline for this Friday, 13 December. That's not an interesting date, but anyway. So we have to submit, if we want to submit something about the HRT, it should be done by this Friday. And I think that you will coordinate with Joy about that. She compiled it from her side. Comments, I think, what we discussed on Buenos Aires, and you will add what we discussed in GNSO Council. So can you tell when you can just maybe provide some drafts so we can discuss that in the list and we have a rough consensus quickly, so to be in time to submit on Friday?
Oh, sure, yeah. Listen, I'll send it to the policy list as well. No problem.
Yeah, so just that's a basic idea that we need to really to send statement in time for public comment as much as possible. Okay. Any comment about the HRT? Unfortunately, Avery is not here, and so... that's a little bit tricky to have more updates about the HRT. But if there is any point or something to add here, it will be good. So, okay, I'm reading Rudy's comments. They say that
with regard to us.
Sorry?
Hello?
Hello?
So this is Klaus with regard to ATRT. We had some discussions in Buenos Aires with the group, and we will make some comments available in the next few days. Just for information.
Yes, Klaus. So what we were discussing, that the policy committee will... that's my understanding, to have discussion about HRT. So if you have some comments, you can add them to there. So okay. So anybody else want to have to comment about the HRT? Okay. Just reviewing quickly the other agenda items for GNSO Council. So in any other business, I see that you will have liaison to the SCI and for Policy and Implementation Working Group. It was, did the Council agree on that, or that it will be decided during the call? Yes, Sam?
For the Policy and Implementation Working Group, Brian Winterfeld and I volunteered to help each other liaise with the council and that working group since we're both on it. SCI, I do not recall if someone stepped up for it or not. Maybe someone else can provide input on that. I don't think there was anyone who volunteered so far, so it probably will come up during the call.
Okay, good. Okay, thanks. Natalie, can you just please move back to the previous document for the agenda? Okay, so I guess we really covered. So I think that's one of, I think the most quickest time that we cover the motion. So there is no objection. There is no real controversial discussion about. So probably the councillor will vote yes for both motion. There is no, I think, any other controversial item in the agenda for the NSO Council, so we can move to the next part, which is update on working groups, panels, and expert groups. So we will start first with who is. I know that we have a new working group about proxy and privacy accreditation, and so also we have here Stephanie, who can brief us about the latest updates from the expert working group, and also we have the latest WHO is study. So let's start with this new working group. I think that you just have okay, there is some echo. You just have working group call.
Hi, this is Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
I'm talking on the phone, not on the computer, so maybe that's causing the echo. Let me know if it really bothers you.
If you are using Adobe Connect, you just need to, turn off the audio, that's all.
I thought I had it off. Okay, is this better?
I think so.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay, well, several of us were just on the call for the privacy proxy working group, so I'll leave it to others to comment on that. Otherwise, I would just say I asked a question about the purpose of this working group, and while I understand that the lists of open questions are detailed in the charter, I guess my concept of a purpose is different than what ICANN considers a concept of purpose. In other words, what actually are we trying to do with this? I don't think that's stated clearly, but that may be just me being picky. Secondly, update on my own working group, the EWG. We did get a work plan from staff the other day. I'm not at liberty to share that work plan. It hasn't been agreed, but I think I can share that the confusion about the dates of our final report seems to be clarifying. They are expecting us to present the final report in June, which is a relief because I was afraid they were expecting it in Singapore, and frankly, everybody's too busy doing all the other work. And there's quite a bit of research that needs to be done that was explained in the last interim report. And there was a date for comments to be received from the community of, I believe, January 30th. So that is a little clearer than it was, because I don't believe when we put the report up that we had a closing date for comments from the community. So Is that enough of an update on that for you?
Well, thanks. But if you think there is any something that we need to worry about that from the expert working group, I think everybody will be happy to know about it. But it looks like it just you have kind of it's more about the plan and when you have to deliver the final report. So.
Okay, well then let me give you my sort of short analysis of what you have to worry about with that EWG report. Obviously, we broke into small groups to work on different chunks of the plan. I tried my best to be on three of those, and it was impossible. There's just too much. You're all familiar with this problem. So there are certain areas that I think have been well identified by the NCSG as of concern to them. One of them is the purpose of registration. Kathy is quite eloquent about that, so you don't need me to point those issues out. It's just one of these hardy perennials, as we say in gardening land. It just keeps creeping back in because certain players want it, and I stomped it out of the areas that I saw it under privacy, but it'll creep back in under data elements. So you need to focus a lot on the data elements and on purpose. So that's a critical concern. I promised at the meeting in Buenos Aires that I would produce a revised policy paper that I had written because basically I felt that one of the problems we had with the expert working group is we were making a lot of recommendations that amounted to substantial policy recommendations that had not been identified. Unaware as I was of all the thrashing around that was going on with PDP processes and recommendations for better PDP processes and arguments between what's policy and what's implementation. Having said that and having read some of the background documents now, I think what I said still goes. It's very useful when you're writing a report of recommendations to solve discrete practical problems that you identify what is a huge policy issue. Otherwise, they just slip in. And that recommendation has not been accepted by the EWG. They are not writing a parallel policy document or having a policy section that points out changes that would amount to substantive policy changes. So I would just draw that to your attention, and I hope to get that particular report done once I get my schoolwork done, so probably by 2nd of January, something like that. Barring calamities. In terms of other things in the report, the jurisdictional issues question remains a little unclear. We have in the report a recommendation for binding corporate rules that was accepted, but no details were provided, and we're still thrashing about how much detail to give. Americans tending to be still very fond of the Safe Harbor Agreement, anyone who knows anything about international privacy work being unimpressed by the Safe Harbor Agreement, particularly because it doesn't apply to nonprofits like ICANN, so why would you advance a proposal for something that you're not eligible to use, you know? So how about that? Does that help? I don't want to take up all our time discussing this, and I'd prefer to answer questions if you have any.
Okay. Thanks, Tiffany. Oh, you covered many points, so I guess we have many questions here. And we will start with Marilor. Marilor, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Rafik. Actually, it's not a question about what Stephanie just presented. It was more about the previous call we had about privacy and proxy accreditation So if anyone wants to go ahead with the issue we're dealing now I can wait in the queue.
Okay, so
I would definitely second the proposal to, not that I don't want to answer questions, but boy, that working group on privacy proxy services is important. And I should just say a word in terms of the EWG report. I have to be a bit careful how I word this. The recommendations that you will see for privacy proxy services came in as a completed piece of work to be included in the privacy section. They were, I guess, already discussed in the Who is Working group, and I understand that Facebook wants these very badly. I have we had some discussion about them, but basically there's a lot of stuff in there that was already discussed at the Who is Working group. I think there is agreement among some members of the EWG that's what we ought to be doing, and I've already heard a view that we should just accept the EWG's recommendations and go forward. Those are not consensus recommendations in the EWG report as yet, and I have pointed this out, that we have included stuff to get a report that we don't necessarily have agreement. If I were to go through the report, I would have to put several footnotes and abstentions, as one does in international agreements, you know? So I derogate from several of the points in there. So I would just put a caution that if someone from the EWG says, let's just take that holus bolus, we'd need to give it a careful read first. I think the worst things are out, but, you know, always have to be careful. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. Amar, yes, please.
Hi, this is Amar. My question regarding the EWG status update report pretty much touches on the privacy proxy services section in the privacy part of the report. And I'm glad you're here, because I really need to go through that report in more detail and more carefully than I did before. But generally, the overall impression I got regarding privacy and proxy is that the mechanism by which entities would be able to sort of qualify to get Who is data by registrants is a lot more robust than mechanisms, for example, on who is allowed to use privacy and proxy services, or I guess you call them shield and proxy services in the expert working group report. And that's just a general impression I got, and it seems that it's a lot easier for folks to sort of become accredited, for lack of a better term right now, to access Who is data, as opposed to those who are applying for shielding and proxy services. And I find that a bit concerning, and I really feel that there are some, especially individuals in certain parts of the world that might be marginalized in terms of the benefits that they might require for events or situations as dramatic as physical safety and security to be able to access it, because the mechanisms suggested in the report don't really make allowances for everybody. Am I being too vague? Do I need to be
I think,
more specific?
I think we've sown a bit of confusion here. So anyone can use a privacy or a proxy or shield service. Anyone, right? They're available on the open market. Then the question is, how does the true identity get revealed to the party that wants it, be that private sector or public sector? Okay? And in the Who is data, no longer will everybody be able to get data, the true data about the privacy or proxy registrant. I'm using terms that I wanted to get rid of, but everybody calls it a privacy proxy service. It's not a privacy service. It's a shield service. That true data is not supposed to be in the central registry. And that was a very contentious point because certain parties want it in there. Instead, if you're using a proxy service, that person is you. They have taken the registration. That person, that registry appears in the who is, okay? In which case, it puts all the more pressure, if this recommendation of the EWG is accepted, on the proxy accreditation agreement. Because if they're not getting it in the who is, they will go to the registrar, the proxy registrar, right? Mm-hmm. And so these reveal issues, what's the threshold for revealing the true identity, become extremely important. There's no point in paying for a service if they're going to cough up and turn you over when law enforcement shows up or when a third-party stakeholder, a trademark owner, shows up. So that's really important, and it may be a huge hole in the EWG recommendations. If the only way to get the data is in the central registry, then at least you can control the accreditation of law enforcement. Now, the process for accrediting law enforcement is one of the pieces that is not well thought out yet. I mean, it's not that we didn't try thinking it out. It's that it's a really complex, difficult process. And law enforcement's first response, I think I can be frank about this, is, are you kidding? We don't know who wants the data. Everybody needs it. And for the private sector players who do a lot of the work on law enforcement, so the security companies, such as run by our representative Rod Rasmussen, he wants all of his guys to have access to the central repository. Now, the controls on this are actually quite robust. For the first time, we will be tracking who gets access to the data. For the first time, they will be required to show a purpose. And for the first time, there will be limits on how much data they can gather and how they hold it. And that will be controlled by audit. So those are robust new controls. Who's going to pay for them and how it's going to work? That's one of the pieces of research that we're asking to have done at the moment. And frankly, if somebody says, oh, we can't afford that, too bad, that's out, then the whole system falls apart. You have masses of data and no controls. So that's one of the caveats I would offer. Does that help clarify a bit?
Yeah, that does, Stephanie. Thanks. So the issue of who gets reveal services, that is a question. But I was wrong in my understanding that not everyone would by default have access to Shield and proxy services then.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone can have Shield and proxy. Where we have a sort of proposed a tribunal and all the rest of it, those are for truly anonymous services, insofar as you can say anything is truly anonymous these days. So the example I would use is a reporter operating in your home country applies.
That was my concern, actually.
Yeah. No. That reporter applies through whoever, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done that we need help on. Let's say Reporter Sans Frontières, our Reporters Without Borders, says we will accredit reporters. They will come to us, and we will advance proposals for secure anonymous credentials for these people. Then that reporter operating in Egypt comes to them. They say, we've got a guy in Egypt. Give us anonymous credentials. We will vouch for him. And the tribunal hears the case, says, yep, here's your anonymous credential. You take an anonymous credential to a proxy privacy service provider who has agreed to accept anonymous credentials. And that includes anonymous payment. which is another thing that has to be worked out, because frankly that's where the breadcrumbs start to accumulate, is on payment. They all want payment data. Anyway, and then that proxy service provider has provided a domain name to a truly anonymous individual. Okay? But this is for people whose life is endangered. Everybody else still uses the normal proxy privacy services.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the clarification, Stephanie. I still do have some concerns about this, and maybe I should probably take this to the list in preparation for a sort of feedback to the status update report. But the thing is that I still think it makes it quite difficult, and to use, for example, my home country, it would be very difficult, even through organizations like Reporters Sans Frontières, I think they're called, it would be very difficult to still sort of get this, because a lot of the activists who need domain names to get their messages out are not officially reporters, and they really can't be, because to be a reporter in a country like Egypt, for example, you have to be approved by a government-controlled syndicate.
And these are the details that have to be worked out. If they have to go through, not that Reporters Sans Frontières wouldn't probably recognize that problem and set up a group that accredits, you know.
Okay.
Human rights groups will have to deal with this. I mean, it's the kind of thing that what we need is a delegation to somebody like Amnesty International to see if they'll take it on. Or the Committee Against Torture. There's a number of human rights groups that aren't necessarily represented, to the best of my knowledge, at ICANN, who would be interested in this. And I think what we really need is kind of I don't want to spend time on this call or like hog all the time, but these are complex issues. We need kind of a teach-in or discussion where we go through it all in at some length. I did talk at some length. I'm on the reference group. Stop me if I've already bored you all with this, but there is a trial of privacy-enhanced credentials going on under the European Prime Project in Frankfurt. Kai Rannenberg, who teaches there at the Goethe Institute and is the head of the SC27 standards group on identity credentials, is doing a trial with co-chaired by Marit Hansen from the Schleswig-Holstein Data Protection Office. And anyway, they're well advanced, and I managed to get enough time to talk to Kai about this proposal. And he's quite interested. He thinks that there would be German secure credentials providers who would be interested in providing those credentials. So that would perhaps be a link, because one of the problems is anonymous credentials aren't a sort of market reality. They're not being used. The technology's been around for ages, but it's hard to get it onto the market because, obviously, the market runs on consumer data, so nobody's really interested in this. So I think that's an important linkage that we've managed to get. It's doable. The technical guys have said there's no reason you can't do this. The problem is all these kind of meat space accreditation issues. I hope you all know what I mean by meat space, the human bits, coming up with people who will attest to the veracity of claims by wandering journalists, you know. But the basic risk, and ICANN doesn't operate on risk analysis, but the basic risk we're dealing with here is the risk that any proxy service provider, when shaken down by the Egyptian authorities, will cough up the name. I mean, if you're given a choice between having your servers confiscated by the state or giving up the name, and this, I don't mean to pick on Egypt, but we're just using it because you know it well.
Please, go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. It applies to any state. Given that kind of pressure, you have to protect the proxy service provider, and this is the best protection.
Okay, all right, thanks. I would like to carry on this discussion maybe on the privacy list later.
Yeah,
This is Klaus. This is Klaus, and I must say thank you very, very much for the issues and explanation. Even if it was a little bit long, it was really helpful, and thank you for that. Just two suggestions. You mentioned the point of there are groups outside which might be involved, and like Amnesty International and so on. I think this is actually quite an outreach opportunity for ICANN to demonstrate to these groups that's important to work together. That's one suggestion. And the other thing is to reflect the point of Amar is I think it's important to have the process as consumer-friendly, if I want to use that word, as possible. I think if somebody is in a situation where he needs protection, the last thing he wants to, or she wants to do is to jump through dozens of hoops. And whilst I understand that that open things like a secure payment, it should be really done and worked out in a most easy, usable way as possible. And I think your group really merits a lot of support and a lot of input from people from different expertise. And Stephanie, really, thank you again for that explanation.
And thank you. I have been thinking about these problems quite a bit because I realize that if you just throw this to ICANN and say, ICANN, you should facilitate this, it isn't going to happen. So I think, and I'm open to ideas, please, you know, this is going to be difficult. It's never been done. But I think the answer might be some kind of a committee of stakeholders who are interested in facilitating and assisting, possibly led by the NCSG, or probably led, because who the heck else is going to do it, but with representation from outside. So, you know, Tor should be involved, because this doesn't stop at the secure credentials. You have to also think of what's going to happen at the ISP level. And representatives of proxy service providers who have agreed to provide this, who are not currently on our, you know, committee, and representatives of the stakeholder groups such as reporters. And I should stress, in case those of you who are unaware, one of the examples that I put in here that I think should appeal to government is there are a lot of government stakeholders who have changed identities. And you know, we can all think of regimes where we're not very happy about it. But all kinds of governments have secret agents. They have FBI guys. And these guys are being exposed and unable to have secure domain names either. So kind of the tit for tat here is governments would come forward and provide anonymous credentials for their own people. Then again, we need, on the technical side, if you have, say, let's pick a number, 200 anonymous credentials out there where you can't get any data, you've got too small a set, you're going to have to salt this data so that they don't show up. That's a technical problem that is non-trivial. So all in all, you need a multi-stakeholder group to get this off the ground. I don't think just the NCSG can carry it. They need, as you say, it's an opportunity for outreach to get more people involved in fixing this problem.
Stephanie, it's Klaus again. What do you think? I have actually in the back of my mind some ideas how it might be able to set up a meeting or a group or expert group together. Do you think it would be, and I would also like the impression of the others in the NGSG, if we would think in the direction of having such a group maybe work as a meeting or being set up for before or after Singapore, so that you have that input, maybe better before Singapore. There are different platforms available which we could actually use to get that going. And I feel it's such important work and so complicated work and such huge work that we can should think about everything possible to make it successful.
I think that's a great idea, Klaus, and I'm really happy to hear it because, frankly, it's like everything else in the EWG report. It works if it all happens, and if you take out key pieces, then, and this is a key piece, because if you haven't protected the most vulnerable, then you cannot move forward getting more data, you know? But if nobody embraces this, then those who don't really want it will say, oh, well, you see, nobody cared about this anyway. It's all just empty rhetoric. Done. We're getting more accurate data. That's my fear. And so the more we take up a proposal and move forward, and by the way, that means you put the brakes on the collection of more data until such time and the verification of the data until you get the other piece working. See? I think it's a great idea. Whether you can, I think there's enough time to do it before Singapore. But it would require everybody to reach out to the appropriate people. Maybe we need a little working group working on this. Wendy's not on the call, eh? Because I know that when I contacted Tor for help on this, and they said, talk to Wendy. She's our girl.
I think it would be a good idea if we're trying to constitute a mini working group on actually getting that meeting set up for Singapore, before Singapore. Is there anybody else just spontaneously at this moment saying they're interested in joining the working group? Okay, that's one Mary Laura. Could be an NPOC working group at the moment. Who else? Come on. Okay, Stephanie, I don't want to drive that any further at this point. I will send an email to everybody telling them what for some very rough idea and trying to get the working group on the working group going.
Right, right. I think there are people outside who might be interested in joining. I know I reached out to those of you who know EPIC. I reached out to Mark Rotenberg and said, help, I need support on this because I'm afraid it's going to die, you know. And even EPIC, who hasn't looked at ICANN for a number of years, is all about anonymous credentials. So, you know, I think that there are some powerful civil society folks out there who would join and help us hook up with appropriate technical people.
Stephanie? I think we can outreach some. Mark, he was for a few months in ICANN in Iraq, and then he left. So it will be interesting to bring him back. And I think we can get EFF and so on, but it takes more time to convince them to join and to be involved. So I think that's need a lot of work and discussion, and I guess we need to maybe to have more a clear proposal and action plan. I guess just moving to working groups so quickly, it can be kind of going a little bit too fast, but just to be sure what we want to achieve at this level. But I like what you suggested and your description of the problem. I was not really aware about such issue, so...
Well, supposing I write up a proposal and send it to the list. How about that?
That works, I think. That works for me. But I'm seeing a lot of comments in the chat. So I think if people want to really express any, let's say, their opinion, they should voice them. Okay.
This is Rama. I was just going to suggest that because there is a lot to talk about on this issue, and we probably need to move along with today's call agenda. But I think we should have a very long and in-depth discussion about this, maybe kick it off on the NCSG list or on the privacy list. If there are folks on the call who are not on the privacy list and would like to be on it, then you should definitely add yourselves to this list, please. Thanks.
Okay. Sorry, just thanks, Ahmed. So you are suggesting to start in the privacy list and the NCSG mailing list, you know, just because it's not everywhere, everybody involved in that privacy group, so.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just worried that there might be some folks who are interested on this call who are not on the privacy list. It would be great if they would join it. This is an NCSG list. And you know, we should have a really thorough discussion, I guess, on that list, because I doubt we can do that right now on this call.
Okay, so what I would propose is I'll do up a one-pager of what I see as the next action items that are needed to support this, and the proposal for this outreach working group, and send it to this list and send it. I think I am on the privacy list, I'm not sure, but if I'm not, I'll know pretty soon when I don't see anything. And then we'll get it going and set up that call that Robin proposed. How about that?
Okay. So we have proposal, then discussion the list, and a call. I think we have a clear action plan, so it works for me. I thought that Klaus, you wanted to speak? Klaus?
Oh, thank you. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comment about this? Okay, I think we covered the expert working group and that the proxy and privacy accreditation, but we didn't hear about who is the studies. Okay, yes, I guess you one of the person that who enjoyed reading those who is the studies, so maybe you can take this item.
Yeah, thanks. I was just going to mention that on today's privacy and proxy service accreditation issues working group call, we selected the chair for the working group, which is going to be Don Blumenthal, and we're going to have a fellow named Graham from the registrar take hold of the group, who I do not know, honestly, and as a vice chair, along with Steve Metallis from the IPC. So that's the real substantive issue, I guess, we settled on today's call.
Can I just say about Graham, I was heartened to see him sign up. He used to be at Citizen Lab with Ron Diebert.
Yep.
So I think he's a good guy.
He's at Two Cows now, I think.
Yeah, he's at Two Cows now. He's a fellow Canadian, obviously. And I think that's good, unless he's totally changed his stripes from when he worked with Ron Diebert. He's at least aware of the issues, you know. And Elliot Noss on Two Cows is not bad on privacy issues, so, you know.
Hey, it's Maria. Yeah, I just to second all of that, I mean, I don't know Graham personally, but I, you know, he's working for or with Ross Ryder, and Ross did just absolute valiant and long-serving Good Who Is work back in, like, 2003, 2004. So, and I think he's the one who got Graham into this. So I think, yeah, Graham sounds like he will be a good guy. He's not massively experienced with ICANN, so hopefully he'll be effective, but he's got his heart in the right place.
Yeah, this is Amr, and it's also going to be pretty great, I think, having Don Blumenthal chair this working group. He did a really good job leading the sub-team on the FIC, who is the PDP working group on privacy and data protection, and I'm looking forward to him doing as good a job on this working group, which is also very important.
Can I just ask a naive question? I like Don, and I've talked to him on these issues, and he seems great, but I have two questions, and I am just talking like a government person or a former government person here. He was for a long time a lawyer with the Federal Trade Commission, who I don't necessarily associate with strong legal privacy rights. And number two, he was proposed by Metallics. And I have been thoroughly warned that Metallics is not the strongest privacy advocate.
I would say that that is an accurate description of Steve Metallics. I only know Don through the thick, who is PDP working group and his work there. And I am aware of his background in law enforcement, but from my personal experience with him over the course of a year's work, this sub-team specifically handling the issue of privacy and data protection in the FIC, who is PDP, was basically me, Roy, and Mary Lore, who were quite new, this was our first working group, the three of us, I think, on that sub-team, who are privacy advocates, pretty much up against Steve and Alan Greenberg, who are, let's say, less of privacy advocates on WHO's issues. And Don was really helpful in us getting what we needed to a large extent out of that sub-team. And that's what I base my own feedback on him, or my perspective on him, and his ability to chair a working group where there is contention amongst different interest groups on privacy. So, but
well,
apart from
and,
that, I can't speak for
exactly,
his professional background.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear, and don't let me, just because he worked for the Federal Trade Commission, that's actually excellent experience in being unbiased and a decent chair. So, you know, I don't mean to tar him with... Yeah,
I understand. I would actually say that he was slightly biased towards privacy, and which was really necessary on this sub-team, considering there were three newbies up against two veteran ICANN folks, who were Alan Greenberg and Steve Metallics. And I'm pretty happy to see him chair this working group. But that's just my personal feedback. I'm sure others have more informed background on Don's performance.
Yeah. It's Maria. No, I actually, Amara, I feel pretty much think the same as you. I mean, you know, Kathy had raised the issue of, well, some of Don's background is sort of law enforcement. So, you know, she kind of raised that as a little bit of a nagging concern. But, you know, our experience of him has always been extremely positive, and PIR, obviously, generally with Kathy and those, is pretty pro-privacy. But, you know, Stephanie, I don't think it's at all naive to ask, like, what Steve's motivation is in doing this. So,
yeah.
I think he must think that Don is kind of more his guy than our guy, or that Don is going to be, I don't know. Like, to be honest, I don't even want to speculate. You know, but I think Don is, he's knowledgeable and he's good, and hopefully he'll be effective, like, you know, and... I kind of felt, even though Steve was a bit of a, you know, it was pretty unpleasant to deal with him on this behind the scenes. But, you know, why cut off our nose to spite our face? I think Don will be good for us, good for the group. So, you know, happy enough to go with him, to be honest.
Well, and the one thing I would say about Don that I've noticed so far is he's not about to be had by anybody, including Metallics. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, he didn't fall off the last tree, that's for sure.
Okay, so just to be sure, did we cover all everything about the Proxy and Privacy Accreditation Working Group?
Yeah, I think we have.
I think so far, yeah.
So, because just about the Who Is Studies, the last one, that latest one that was just is for public comment, and I'm not sure if anybody already read it, or so maybe I thought that... Hammer, I know that you like those studies, so did you have the chance?
Yeah, it's on my to-do list, Rafiq. It's on my to-do list. This is the Who Is This You study. And, it's on my to-do list, but I honestly haven't had a chance to go through it yet. But as soon as I do, I will start posting, at least start posting discussion points to the list, and hopefully come back with a draft feedback to it.
Okay. Yes, that's if everyone, I'd say,
if yeah, you can send the briefing so we can start discussion and maybe to prepare to draft, how to say, statement for the public comment in time. Anybody had had the chance to check that that study?
Sorry, Rafiq, it's Maria. Which study?
This is the Who is Miss You study that was just published, I think, about a week ago.
All right, thank you. No, I haven't looked at it, but I've signed up for there's a webinar next Thursday week, the 17th of, Tuesday week, the 17th of December, so I'm going to tune into that.
Yes, please. There are many webinars going on, so we need really to share the workload and trying to cover all these ongoing stuff. Okay, so I guess we can move to the next item, but we already covered the ATRT, and we have Joy and Maria volunteering to draft for this week. So the next item is about the translation and transliteration of contact information. I guess Rudy, as a co-chair, can tell us more about, he's the co-chair of drafting team, he can tell us more about this. And then I'm, yes, Rudy?
Yes, thank you, Rafik, Rudy, for the transcript. Well, there was normally today there was a webinar scheduled, but before noon I got the message that the webinar of 13 UTC and 18 UTC is cancelled. I have no information on the reason of this cancellation. There is actually the call for volunteers for this working group. Together with Chris Dillon, who was a co-chair also in the drafting team, we have put forward, on his request, he put forward our two names again for trying to help this working group going through the work that has to be done as co-chairs. So the problem that I see is that we will need, just like for the expert working group for the privacy topic, we will need many more heads and hands and ears to fill up this working group, because it's also going to be a very tough one. And it's, in fact, all related to the single wording, the Who is. I'm just wondering how many people we are going to get into working group. I know Amer is also very engaged in this, but actually the working group is scheduled to start. I'm just missing the date for the first meeting. There's already a date, I think it's next week, if I'm not wrong, that we have the first conference call on this. It's scheduled for on Monday the 16th there is a proposal, then Tuesday the 17th there is a proposal for a meeting, and then we have Thursday the 19th and Friday 20th there are two dates scheduled in the doodle. So that is the planning for trying to start up the working group. But I allow Amber also to give his comments.
Thanks, Rudy. Unfortunately, the webinar was canceled, but at least I got a request from three members from NCAG who are volunteering to join the working group. So I guess that they need support and advice how to be involved and to participate effectively. Yes, Hamad, please go ahead.
Yeah, just to add to Rudy's brief, when we were drafting the charter of this PDP, we had very low participation in the drafting team, and we, especially Rudy, expressed some concern about this. And we thought, well, it's okay, this is just a drafting team, and when the working group comes around, we'll get more participation. But from what I can tell, that seems to be wrong as well. This is going to be a very small working group, basically consisting of some of the folks who were involved in the drafting of the charter. And privacy might be somewhat of an issue on this PDP, although I do not predict that it will be the main issue. I think there are other issues involved, and what I would really like to see us priding ourselves as a stakeholder group with two constituencies having so many members from outside of North America and Europe, is I would really like to see some of our members who don't use Latin script in their native alphabets to participate in this working group and maybe weigh in with what they think is important. And I do believe we have had a few bites from some of our members, but so far they are not on the members list for this working group, so they haven't actually signed on yet. Let me post the... All right, that's the page with the members of this working group so far. It's really a small one. And they're all basically people who are involved in the drafting and involved to varying degrees. Some of them really weren't actually involved. I think the people who were involved were just maybe three or four of us. And, that's really about it. And this working group, I sent a note about it to the list. It's basically, its mandate is to determine whether or not translation and transliteration of contact information in the WHO is, whether it's desirable or not to translate and transliterate it. And the second main question the working group is going to be asked to address is, well, if it is desirable, then who should decide who will bear the cost of translation and transliteration? And there are a bunch of other smaller questions sort of that are meant to help in making that some of these decisions. That's about all I have on that for now. And you know, we don't have an initial call scheduled, but I doubt we will have a first call before the end of the Christmas break.
Thanks, Amar. Even if I recall correctly, for the internationalized registration data, we didn't have so many people involved, but that can be explained that it was a joint working group between GNSO and CCNSO. There was limitation on the number of members, but I guess maybe we need to outreach more, and those folks who were are involved in IDN issues for a long time, I think they have more insight about those kind of problems. Stephanie, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I had asked the question in the EWG because we didn't... I remember that the topic of the transliteration came up. We didn't address it in our report. And the response of the techies and the registrar, so you know who I'm talking about, Scott Hollenbeck and McKaylee, because I said, well, why do we have this? Who wants it? And is it important for us? Because if script doesn't work in the centralized system, then we got a problem. They assure me that actually it doesn't cause a problem, that script works and is accepted by the system. So the answer as to who wanted it was law enforcement. So now the question, and this is, of course, I'm always looking at things first of all as a privacy person, why would you want to mandate translation if it is not for users as a whole? If it is only for law enforcement interests, and by that I include trademark folks, then why would you cover the translation cost for them centrally? Because it's going to be fairly significant. And secondly, of course, any sort of automated transliteration brings in error, right? So those are my questions. Do we have a needs assessment? Do humans want this, or only, I don't mean that law enforcement people aren't human, you know what I mean. Does the average user need this?
Hopefully law enforcement are still human, but Amar, please go ahead.
Yeah, Stephanie, you've raised some spot-on questions, really, and I'm a bit worried because I'm going to be on this working group, and I'm worried that my views might diverge with a lot of other NCSG members' views on this, because I'm a bit skeptical about the need for this PDP to go on. And I should also mention that there is a new expert working group that is going to specifically focus on registration data of internationalized domain names, or internationalized registration data, sorry. And they did say that it won't be a problem to introduce new scripts into the systems they use. But my impression was the same as yours, is that this looks like it's something that trademark holders and law enforcement will probably make the most use of. And another one of the questions that is being raised here is a decision on who will decide will bear the cost. So not only will law enforcement agencies and trademark holders potentially be the main beneficiaries of this sort of policy, but they might actually get other people to pay for it. And this is, I think, something that is concerning registrars. I'm concerned that this won't eventually trickle down to registrants. Registrants are basically going to be paying the price for this if there is a policy requiring all contracted parties or registrars to provide this service. These questions you raised are questions that are in the charter, so we will have at-length discussions on them. I expect the registrars to show some concern from their own perspective because of their own interests, their financial interests. We should see, I guess, where it is we agree on with them on some of the principles. But if you're up to it, please join the working group and convey these concerns. I'll do my best to do that as well. Thanks.
Well, I'm already on two working groups, and let me tell you, I think it's going to kill me, the policy one and the proxy one. I don't know how you guys keep up.
So, Stephanie, as the French say, jamais deux sans trois, so you need to be in the third working group, too. about the internationalized registration data, I think it also was covered by the WHOIS review team report, and I think there was some recommendation about, I don't recall what it was about exactly, but that's why I guess that's why we are moving toward this transliteration and translation of contact information. So, Amar, please keep us updated about those issues. Yes, and it's really important to involve our NCAG member there. I think that we have many new members there, so it will be their first experience. I guess we can move to the next item. Another funny topic, I guess. It's about policy and implementation working group. Amar, okay. Rudy has a comment. Yes, Rudy?
Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you, Amar. Rudy speaking. Rafik, Rudy speaking. My big concern that I have, it's related to all the working groups that I have seen requesting volunteers and even in the ongoing work groups. I have the impression that the policy group is overloaded with a lot of working groups and tasks, and at the end, it's all about the same volunteers. It's very difficult to get people involved for free for several hours a week to spend time on discussing issues that, in fact, initially the question has not been answered, like Amar was putting on the table, and Stephanie also. Why do we need this working group for translation and transliteration? Well, it's needed because somewhere somebody found out that there was an issue. And I would like to see, and maybe it's in the policy and implementation working group, that this could be dropped on the plate. I would like to see why, was, in some cases, why is there a request for a work if the answers are given in other contexts already. So it could help us to lower the workload and to work on really concrete solutions instead of trying to figure out which of the working groups has less conflict with the other ones. It's just a comment that I have as I'm trying to join a few working groups and it makes life difficult if you have to jump from one to another all the time.
Yes, Rudy. Yeah, there is overload. It has to cover many issues at the same time. So that's why we try to expand the base of our volunteers and to share the workload, to coordinate, so to be effective, because we cannot expect that the same people join several working groups at the same time. That's not sustainable. But so that's why we try to have more volunteers to help them to join working groups. Because it's even when we get volunteers, it's the second step is to how to support them to be involved. It's not always easy. So, yeah, the question why we have many issues, that's also General Council decide to initiate several PDP because there are several requests. So it's not easy answer at this stage, I think, but yeah, it's a topic for discussion. At this, maybe we can move to the next item, which is about the policy and the implementation working group. I think we received a request from the chairs of this working group to comment, and hopefully Hammer can give us a briefing about what is expected and when we need to send a comment. Yes, Hammer, please go ahead.
Yeah, the charter for this working group is a really complex one, but simply put, this is not a PDP working group. This working group is tasked with giving the GNSL Council some recommendations on the principles that are related to policy and implementation discussions. So far, we're still at a very early stage on this working group. So there isn't really much to report on in terms of what the working group has done. We basically had a work plan sub-team come up with a schedule and what we are going to be, what the schedule for the working group ideally should be. And we started off with a set of working definitions for the working group's use. That was the first sub-team to start so that everybody's just on the same page. And eventually, right now, there's just starting another sub-team to start discussing the principles underlying policy and implementation. And I guess everyone here can sort of relate to why this is a hot topic, especially with what happened on the trademark plus 50 issues and really underscoring what is policy and what is implementation, what is the difference between the two. Something that is new to me on this working group, though, is that the working group is also chartered to take a look at what something will be called instead of as opposed to a PDP, a new sort of process called policy guidance that the GNSO would supposedly provide. This is new to me, and it's supposed to be sort of like a shortcut instead of doing a full-blown PDP starting from the issue report up until a set of policy recommendations ends up being approved or disapproved by the board of directors of ICANN. There's a lot of stuff to mull over in the charter, and like Rafiq said, we just received a request for input, and this will not be the last request for input from this working group. This is a preliminary one on the principles, and we do need to work on that. If I'm not mistaken, the request has gone to the constituency leaders. I'm not sure if it has gone to the NCSG leadership or not. Rafiq, you could probably tell us. So we might want to have an NCSG comment or possibly two comments, one by MPOC and one by NCUC. But we should start working on it fairly quickly, because the working group there was a bit of a mix-up, and this request for input was delayed in sending out to the constituency and stakeholder group leaders, and the working group is waiting. But we do have this upcoming winter break, and so hopefully we could get something going. I'll try to help with that as much as I can, of course. Thanks.
Thanks, Amar. Yes, the winter break, I guess, is the best time to spend in ICANN stuff. And I received an email from staff. I think Chuck is the co-chair of the working group, and I forwarded that to the policy committee to discuss about it. I think it's better to flesh out that kind of discussion within the PC before sending to the membership. As you said, that's a little bit, I'll say, complex issue. So if the BC can cover it and try to come with a statement, that can be much more easy later to discuss with the membership.
This is Amar again. If I could add, I don't predict that this working group will be one where there is much contention amongst the members. So this is going to be something where I think a lot of the folks on the working group are going to see eye to eye on in terms of defining the process. And I'm talking about maybe people from non-commercial and people from the commercial stakeholder group, people from at large, from ALAC who are on the working group as well. I think we should have a fairly, this is what I predict, a fairly sort of a smooth working together, a smooth experience working together on this working group. I will keep bringing back updates to the NCSG. It would be nice to see some more NCSG members active on this working group. It's going to be a lot of work, and I've already been on two sub-teams, and I think it's going to be difficult keeping track of all of them. I would appreciate if others would join and start becoming more active on this working group. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I think we have several members from NCAG there, so I guess that's what's needed, some coordination. So trying to cover if you have several sub-teams and so on. Any comment on that? Okay, I guess that's... yes, Stephanie?
I was typing it, but talking faster. I'd just like to propose that if Amar would like to assign tasks on that policy working group, I just joined. I need to, of course, read all the documents. I have some fairly specific views about some of the failures in the policy process, which I described earlier, and I have a bunch of concrete proposals I'd like to make. One of them being that I can institute what I call a regulatory impact assessment notice, well known to North Americans and Europeans, because it's something that we do when we propose legislative amendments, because what we're not doing at ICANN is thoroughly assessing the impact of decisions. What happens is somebody then pulls another wretched working group to look at what happens. It seems to me that's just a beginner's note. So please, if there's a subgroup that I should go to, and if there's an articulation of my views that you need before I start talking out in working groups, I don't want to upset the apple cart, but it does seem to me that there's some stuff that doesn't work in policy.
Stephanie, this is Amar. Don't worry about upsetting anyone. Especially on this working group, I think it's going to be a fairly friendly one. And generally, my experience is that folks are quite welcoming to newcomers. through the PVP, so don't worry about that. If you want a recommendation on what sub-team to join, I would recommend that you join the 0B sub-team. You can just let Chuck know. This is the sub-team that is going to start working on the principles. Or it actually has started recently, but they're not through it yet. So if you could join that sub-team, that would be great. Thanks.
Stephanie, I think you get work to do. Any further comment on this? So the last item in the, about the update, that's not usual working group or expert working group or whatever, but this is the Multi-Stakeholderism Innovation Panel. A few days ago, I sent the call in how to participate, to send comment and so on. Honestly, I'm not sure how we can if we have enough time or interest to submit comments, but at least I would like to encourage the members to do so and to submit their comments. So, any idea or if we should go to say? Okay, yes, Stephanie, you want to comment or your hand just was raised from before?
Hi, no, sorry, I was reading that last document. I'm lowering my hand now.
Okay, thanks. So, I guess we... it's not really critical, but I think it's should be. We should encourage people to submit, because it's quite an unusual process for us, and I think we are already overloaded with the public comments, working groups, and many things going on. And adding this strategic panel is not necessarily what we can handle. But I guess since it's talked about multi-stakeholderism, that's really something that interests many of our members. That's why I thought that to see how we can manage to provide some comments. But anyway, I guess we can move to the next item if there is no any further comment. But I see that some he say that he has some comments. So, Sam, you want to add something? Hello, Tim.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Sam, please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, please go.
Okay. No, I was just saying that I've been working elsewhere on issues around multi-stakeholderism, and I'm quite eager for that to be one of the areas where I start doing work here. I mean, in short, the oldest model of multi-stakeholderism we have is democracy. And so one of the things that caused democracies to work and not work, there are a lot of lessons learned there that are transferable. That's all I had to say.
Okay, Sam. And I saw that the comment that you need mentorship, but yeah. If you really want to join any working group, I think any NCNG member will be glad to help you and support you. So no worry about that. Just try to go through some working groups and feel free to join any one of them. Amr, you have further comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say on the Multi-Stakeholderism Innovation Panel, I recall that you... some very constructive feedback for them at their session in Buenos Aires, And I was hoping that you guys could maybe come up with some of that, some input on that, because I think what you have to say on the existing PDP and whether they're actually taking a closer look at it or not, and really getting a strong idea on the special interest groups that are already involved, I think those were very important points that Beth Novak and the rest of her panel need to take into consideration. And if they're not doing that, then they're not really doing their homework. And I was hoping that you and perhaps you and Milton could pass this along formally through whatever channels that panel is using. Just to be clear, Sam and others, panels, the different panels that are going on right now, which we've dubbed the FEDI panels, these are not part of the PDP. They're outside of the PDP, and they're supposed to come up with recommendations to the board that will require some form of action from the ICANN Board of Directors that does not involve voting, but will involve something that is yet to be determined. Please do get involved if you can. And, well, I hope to hear more from Rafiq and Milton on this. Thanks.
Thanks, Amal, for volunteering me. Thank you very much. I guess we'll figure out how to try to provide something as soon as possible. Okay. I guess we can go to the next agenda item. I think we covered several issues about open comment period, like for ADRT, the who is Misius Tadis, also about, I guess, the policy and implementation working group. I'm not sure if we are missing other. For this week, also about the new in regard to DOT brand. So we have several public comments, and I think it's better if we can have someone to lead for each comment, a volunteer. It's not necessarily for him or her to draft, but at least to have the ownership of that, quote-unquote ownership, and to try to facilitate the drafting of the comment and compile opinion from the membership and so on. So we can share the workload. I will send later to the mailing list the several and ongoing public comment, and then just to try to find volunteers. Hopefully not, to try to have more diversity, not to avoid to have the same people already have a lot of workload. So. Any suggestion about that? I welcome any ideas or opinion about that, because I guess one of the challenge for NCAG is really to cover as much as possible the public comments. Amr, you want to add something? Or?
No, I'm sorry, that was an old hand.
Okay. Well, so I think we can move to my preferred agenda item, which is any other business, and just is about the Brazil summit updates. It's not the Brazil summit; I think it's the Brazil conference or meeting. And maybe Robin can tell us a little bit what's happening on around that. Robin.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so the Brazil conference. Okay, so the Brazilian the CGI.br, who is organizing the meeting in Brazil in April, has said there will be a series or a couple of organizing committees will be established that will include the different stakeholders for their input and participation into the meeting in Brazil. And we don't know yet. We haven't heard specific dates from CGI Brazil by when they need by when they want to know which representatives should represent different stakeholders in these organizing committees. And we also don't know how many people we need to find to participate in these organizing meetings. But we stand ready to have this information at any moment and ready to put out a call for nominations for that. So any time now, if there are any Brazilians on the call who have no more than me or have more updated information, then please speak up on that. So we're kind of in a holding pattern with respect to the Brazil meeting. Now, related to that is the OneNet steering committee, which is being established, and it's pretty murky how it's all being set up. But basically, ADL, who's working with FADI to facilitate the coordination of the initial steering committee, has made a call for basically five representatives from each of the different stakeholder groups comprising the business people and civil society and academics and the technical community. So we are working with a coalition of other civil society groups, other networks, so NCSG and Best Bits and the Internet Governance Caucus and Diplo Foundation and there's one more, APC. So we're trying to put together some names, five names to take back to ADL for the civil society representatives on this OneNet steering committee. And so we had a call for nominations and took nominations through yesterday, and there was six or so candidates, nominations made from NCSG. I can tell you who they are. Let's see, Rafik Dimak and Klaus Stoll and Marie-Laure Lemonneur and Nuno Garcia and Remni Nueki and Mariela Maciel and, she was nominated from another stakeholder group. So those were the people who were nominated on the NCSG list. And I expect in the next, two or three days, we will hone this down, because all of these different networks have come up with nominations as well, and so we have to pare it down to five specific representatives for all of civil society, not just one particular network. So then we'll forward those names to ADL, and that committee should be the OneNet steering committee should be impaneled pretty soon. Also sort of related to this is the high-level meeting in London that ICANN called for, one of FADI's strategy panels, or similar to FADI's strategy panels, where, he invites a lot of big names to come and talk about Internet governance, and then this is going to be an input into the Brazil meeting and into the future of Internet governance, possibly new structures for managing these critical Internet resources. So it could be a big deal. And there was nobody from civil society who had really been consulted or invited to participate on the initial list of participants to FADI's panel, and so we complained in Buenos Aires, and FADI said, okay, put more he'd put another civil society person on, and we said, well, you know, you really should put two because you've got so many people from business and so many people from the technical community and so many more people from government that we think you should put two. Well, now it looks like Fadi's not putting any additional civil society representatives on the panel. So unfortunately, you know, it's kind of surprising because he did come back and say to me, well, we won't put two, but we'll put one. And now he's apparently not even putting one on and not responding to my emails asking for clarification about the process. So that was disappointing because we took names and we had a big process with these other civil society networks. And Milton Mueller and Henriette Esther Houston were the two names that we sent to Fadi. We're expecting at least one of them to be put on this high-level panel, and so far neither has been, and they're not returning our emails asking for an explanation as to what's happened. So, more goodwill from Fadi. So I don't think there's a whole lot of trust being built by the OneNet organizers right now to encourage civil society's participation or to feel like this is really a process that we can trust to engage in, that we're not going to just be used. But, it, you know, really remains to be seen. It's still pretty early, although, you know, this has been going on for more than a month now, and unfortunately nothing has really improved. So it doesn't look good. Okay, so that's my update. A little gloom and doom.
Okay, thanks, Robin. That's why it's exhaustive update. So when kind of civil society nomination committee ad hoc group will decide for the nomination for OneNet steering committee?
It's within the next, say, maybe 2 or 3 days. I think by Monday. Now that I think about it, I think it's by Monday, the 15th, that we're supposed to send those names to ADL.
Okay, thanks. Yes, we have Klaus and then Amok. Yes, Klaus, please go ahead.
Robin, thank you for the update. I agree with you that things are extremely murky on the side of OneNet and everything. Nobody knows really what's going on. But on the other hand, listening to you, I've got the feeling that the civil society sector and the way we are choosing people and talking about other groups and networks and things like that, we are doing basically the same trick. And I really would like to know from you a little bit more the details. What are the processes and the ways in which are decided who's representing whom and what, because I find it as equally murky as what's going on the other side.
Yeah. Well, so there are these five different networks, civil society networks that I mentioned. And so there's a representative from each one of these networks that's participating on this sort of an ad hoc coordination committee. So, you know, I sort of represent NCSG on this committee, and Virginia Peck represents the Diplo Foundation, and Jeremy Malcolm represents Best Bits, and Chat, now I'm blanking on Chat's last name, represents APC, and then with respect to the Internet Governance Caucus, there's Sala, with the last name I can't pronounce. And so these are representatives from each one of these different networks, and NCSG is one network in this larger coalition. And so what we're trying to do is work together, and that's why we're all putting out calls for nominations to each one of our networks and then bringing all of those names back to the table for the broader coalition of networks to then pare that down to, in this case, with respect to the OneNet Steering Committee, five representatives who we think can best represent the entire coalition of civil society groups. So is that helpful?
No, Robin, I find it actually scandalous. The first question is, who decided that these are the five networks representing civil society? I can give you off the cuff at least another dozen of who should be asked. You said you participated on the on behalf of the NGSG, and were there any contacts to NPOC, for example, to ask them which networks or people, which networks they would have been interested to join that coalition? I find that coalition business fairly iffy, and assuming a role or claiming a role of representation, which is, in my opinion, actually quite questionable.
Well, there was a talk about criteria that any coalition, any group of civil society organizations that could join could be part of this coalition, provided certain objective criteria is met. Is it, for example, is it a global coalition? And so if you've got someone who meets this criteria, bring them forward. Nobody's going to exclude them. And also, they should be participating, or they can be participating already through NCSG, through Internet Governance Caucus, through a lot of these other networks. We've got a lot of overlap. So a lot of times, members are participating, even if they're one of their organizations isn't in one of these coalitions, they're still participating in another. And, you know, like I say, it's open to anyone, so bring them forward.
Please, Robin, be fair and be reasonable to talk later about, oh, yeah, you could join. What were the mechanisms? How were the global other groups approached? How could they be informed? And to call now somebody to join in later when basically the decision making is done, and also in who decided on the criteria. I must say I find that very, very murky, and I don't want to go now in a huge discussion about this, but this seems to be giving ammunition to those we are criticizing, because we are basically doing exactly the same what we are blaming them for.
I actually don't see it that way. Fadi said, give me names, and we had 1 week in which to give him names. So we tried to reach out to all the networks that we're aware of and take nominations from anyone who would bring them forward and bring all of the civil society groups within our networks into the participation, and if you think there are more, bring them. We had to make a decision within 1 week.
Representative of another global network that Fadi told you give me names, and I don't think it's fair to give talk on behalf of civil society when you didn't inform civil society.
I informed the NCSG list immediately what we were doing, and that is civil society. That's the list here that I'm reaching out to, that I'm responsible for. So if you think that message needs to go further, take it to whatever further lists that you feel need to be included.
Okay, guys. I don't think it's, let's say, I understand the both sides. It's always hard to define, the full spectrum of civil society, and in particular when we have such ad hoc process, how to be inclusive. So I guess there is always room for improvement, but I don't think we can blame each other. So, Klaus, I understand that you are talking about other networks. If you have names, you should encourage them to join. So that's not easy, because I think we were put in such situation to react quickly. And I don't think it's good to blame ourselves. We were put in such situation to react, to figure out about this Brazil conference. Myself, I was not really in favor, because it's come from nowhere, and then we have all these logistics issues. How can we even attend? There is no even guarantee till now that people can participate in this Brazil conference. So let's be positive and try to figure out how we can improve the process to be more inclusive and so on. Amr, and then Stephanie. Yes, Amr.
Yeah, hi, Rafik. I think you just basically went over quite a few of the things that I wanted to say. I've been looking around the OneNet eye coordination list for, well, since we were in BA in Buenos Aires. And that was because when we were in Buenos Aires, Fedi was saying, well, if you guys want to be involved in Brazil, then please join the OneNet initiative. And I had always been thinking, well, why aren't these folks getting their act together and starting to talk about how they're going to send people to Brazil? And I thought that this is something they should really work hard on. And then recently, after the whole list of nominations was announced by Adiel, and then apparently there was some confusion that I think Robin raised everybody's attention to, and wait a minute, where are these nominations going? Who's going to be deciding whether they were going to be represented or not? And then now we're hearing that, well, no, OneNet was actually not made, was not sort of set up in response to the Brazil summit or conference or whatever. It was something out of the Montevideo statement. Before anyone ever knew that there was going to be a conference in Brazil, and that the sort of the scope of work or the mission of OneNet is not limited to that, and now folks are starting to think maybe we should be talking about other things as well. So my question, just after this impression, was, is there really any guarantee that any of the nominations coming out of OneNet are actually going to make it to Brazil and be able to represent their stakeholder groups or not? And, well, from what I could tell from your last comment, Rafik, is that this question is kind of still up in the air, and there are no guarantees. If there is more insight on this, I'm just really curious. Thanks.
For OneNet, I don't think they have the main role to define who will be in the other Brazil conference committee. So, as Robin explained, that will be the Brazilian side, and they didn't even now set how many representatives from each stakeholder. So it's a little bit, you know, people discussing about nomination, and and we don't even know the number of representatives for each stakeholder group. So,
yeah, Rafik, sorry, this is Amr again. That's right. That is the point that I was trying to make. But if I'm not mistaken, in Buenos Aires, we were told, if you want to be involved, then please join the OneNet initiative. Isn't that the message we were given at the time? And isn't this sort of what caused the sort of a gold rush to OneNet, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah. I'm guessing that everyone who's joined OneNet because of the Brazil summit. And now we're hearing, well, actually, OneNet's got nothing to do with Brazil, but we're trying to get in on the action. So it seems that there's just a series of mixed messages going on.
It's my impression that that the OneNet folks maybe jumped the gun in terms of their expectation that they would have some organizational claim to the Brazil meeting, and I think that was taken as a surprise to the Brazilians, and so I think that I think that, you know, now sort of OneNet is a solution in search of a problem, because I agree that I think a lot of people joined OneNet because they thought that was going to be the means by which one participates in the Brazil meeting. But I think, again, that may have been a premature claim by the OneNet organizers. So I think it really is yet remains to be seen just what OneNet is for, and, you know, what is its mission and the scope of its work. It's because I think it isn't quite as focused on the Brazil meeting as some had originally claimed in its founding. That's my, it's just my impression.
Okay.
It's an impression that I share.
We have Stephanie. She was still waiting in the queue. Stephanie?
Hi. Hang on, I got to turn the speakers off again so you don't get the echo. There we go. Forgive me if I sound cynical. Just blame it on having worked for government a long time. But I am very suspicious of this process of casting about finding new civil society reps. This is not to be confused with the need to reach out and engage more people in ICANN processes, because it's more important than people realize. But to be casting about as they are now and finding new names, I'm suspicious, particularly when a well-known name, namely Milton Mueller, has been turned down. Now, I would suggest that one of the tactics in this whole business is, if you get new players who you don't know, and you can impress them by giving them a free trip to Brazil or whatever, then they might not be as difficult to deal with as, say, some of the folks that you've known and loved for many years, like, oh, say, Milton, who's unlikely to be seduced by a free trip to Brazil when we're talking about really the issue that has shaped his academic career, namely Internet governance, right? So I don't see why. I would demand to know why nobody's responded to those two names that were put forward. And the idea that we would be casting about for more names troubles me.
No, I really share your concern, and unfortunately, this is a pattern that we're seeing with this senior management of ICANN, is that if the bottom-up process doesn't produce the results that they want at the top, they just ignore those and come down with a different top-down policy.
You need to call them on it.
I agree. I absolutely agree, and like I say, I've been sending emails to him that have gone unresponded, and I will continue to demand an answer for this.
Okay, guys, it's I'd say 6 minutes after the, you know, we are running of time, and I guess we cannot have some agreement here, but at least, I think, as I said before, we put in some situation, and we had to react. So let's see what we can do till this Brazil conference, and I hope that we will go beyond, because I think it's taking too much of our bandwidth and energy, and we need to really to be more focused. So hopefully we will move forward. Okay. So, any other business? Any other item that you want to talk about? And to have, a happy end for this? Sorry, it's, I have to say, 3 a.m. here, and so just I'm trying to... to run up this this call. It was really, I didn't expect such such discussion on several topics. So I'm really happy that you could join, and we could cover several issues, like about who is, and already we have some action plan. So if there is no any
drama, why are you looking for a happy ending? You're just getting started, aren't you?
Happy end? What?
Yeah. You're in an awful rush.
Jesus. Okay. You will pay later. I'm about
to be too anxious, Avik.
Okay.
So, guys, at least I made you, how to say, it was funny at the end, so everybody is happy. That's my aim as a chair. And so, if there is no further comment, I will adjourn this call, and I am really thankful that you could attend. And so, I guess we can enjoy later the Genasso Council. So, as a reminder, there is the audio cast. So, okay.
Thanks, Rafiq. Great call.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rafiq. Bye.
Happy holidays.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.